afternoon and welcome to Vision
Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to Indigenous Voices on Now Time Radio. I am your host, Audrey Scott Williams. It is indeed an honor and a privilege to bring you this premier show, Indigenous Voices. Indigenous Voices is the result of a partnership between the United Religion Initiative, Global Indigenous Initiative, and Now Time Radio. Indigenous Voices will feature Indigenous artists, activists, wisdom keepers, and spiritual leaders raising their voices to bring messages from an Indigenous perspective. And the issues we will talk about range from cultural heritage, women and children, the environment, our relationship to Mother Earth, preservation of sacred sites, human rights, spirituality, religion, and interfaith. The United Religions Initiative, and you'll hear me refer to it as URI, is a global grassroots interfaith network that cultivates peace and justice by engaging people to bridge religious and cultural differences and work together for the good of their community and the world. Indigenous Voices airs at 3 p.m. Eastern Time every other Thursday beginning today, and you can call in at 424-243-9656. You can also live stream or listen to the podcast at any time at www.blogtalkradio.com/nowtimeradio. I would like to thank production assistant John Ware of Ware Tech Studios for his sound editing, and also Rachel Watcher for her translation assistance in our pre-recorded interview with Elder Kispa. They both graciously offered their assistance, and I am appreciative because it's the volunteers who come together that help make every show possible, make every show a success. So welcome to Indigenous Voices, and I'd like to begin with a pre-recorded message from Reverend Victor Kazanjian, Jr. He is the Executive Director of the United Religions Initiative. He couldn't be with us today, but wanted very much to bring a message acknowledging this premier event. He'll be flying out of the country this afternoon. But it was important for him that he share with you, with all of us, the importance of this moment.
Thank you, Audrey, for the honor of being a part of this inaugural broadcast of Indigenous Voices. This program gives voice to the wisdom of the Indigenous peoples of the planet, educating the world about Indigenous cultures and calling upon all sisters and brothers to live together in harmony with one another and with the earth that is our home. Indigenous Voices is a part of the global movement of voices calling for justice and peace among all peoples, and especially for those whose voices and cultures have so often been devalued by those without respect for the ancient peoples of the planet. All of us who are part of the United Religions Initiative celebrate this program as an essential part of a movement dedicated to ending violence and oppression, fostering understanding, and creating cultures of peace and justice for the earth and all living beings. Around the world this week, we celebrate Interfaith Harmony Week, a time in which we are all called to open ourselves to the beauty of the many and diverse cultures and religious and spiritual traditions of the human community, and to see the Great Spirit, the essential force of life and love in one another. This week, we are reminded that we are all fellow travelers on life's pathways. While we may speak of our experiences of the world using words that come from different ancient stories and which are spoken in different languages, when we look into each other's eyes, when we take each other's hands, when we sit together upon Mother Earth under Father Sky in the spirit of peace, we can see and feel in each other the light of which all of our traditions speak. And yet too often, the differences among us have been a cause of violence. There is no place for such violence in this world, whether it be the violence of war or the violence of poverty. This violence must be replaced by an understanding of the interwovenness of all life, a deep respect for all of the cultural, religious, and spiritual traditions of the world, and the mutual care of one another. On this day, I offer the words of the Great Spirit, Mahatma Gandhi, who looked into the eyes of others around him and said, "I offer you peace. I offer you love. I offer you friendship. I see your beauty. I hear your need. I feel your feelings. Your wisdom flows from the highest source. I salute that source in you. Let us work together for unity, love, justice, and peace. During the days of this week of interfaith harmony and all the days of the rest of our lives, let us work together for unity, love, justice, and peace."
I'd like to thank Reverend Victor Kazandian, Jr., Executive Director of the United Religions Initiative, for taking his time out of what is an incredibly busy schedule to offer those words for us on this premier show of Indigenous Voices. Our next guest is Elder Alejandrino Quispa Mahi. He is a Quechua elder, and he brings to us words from his point of view, as he stresses, of his relationship with the Cosmovision of the Quechua. He will be sharing his tradition with us. Mr. Quispe is a professor of elementary education and social anthropology. He is a member of the Amaru Cooperation Circle in Ayacucho and a co-convener of the Global Indigenous Initiative. And again, I want to thank Rachel Watcher for her translation services during our interview.
Yo vivo en una comunidad que está en el departamento de Ayacucho.
He lives in a community in Peru, which is in Ayacucho de Peru.
Y el Perú está ubicado en la parte occidental de la América del Sur, de la América del Sur.
It's located in South America.
Está en el Perú, en la parte central de la cordillera de los Andes.
So he's in the central Peru, which is in the corridor of the Andes.
Los quechuas vivimos entre los 1,000 meters sobre el nivel del mar a 3,000 meters sobre el nivel del mar. Es un piso ecológico.
So he lives in an ecological zone, 1,000 to 3,000 meters above the sea level. The Quechua live in this zone.
Distinguimos dos épocas al año, una de lluvia y una que no llueve.
He said there's two seasons in Peru, one is dry and one is wet. One with rain and one without.
Ahora está lloviendo, por ejemplo, desde diciembre, entonces hemos sembrado a las tierras que no tienen riego, no se puede regar con agua. Solamente se produce con lluvia.
So they basically, what we would call dry crop, they plant during the rainy season. And right now it's raining, and it will be raining for a couple of months yet.
Is this near the Sacred Valley?
Yes.
El Valle Sagrado también es Quechua.
The Sacred Valley is Quechua.
Cusco, desde Puno viene desde Bolivia.
So
desde Bolivia, Perú, Ecuador, estamos los que en Argentina también hay grupos Quechua.
So the Quechua are widely dispersed in Peru, Bolivia, Ecuador, and in donde?
Colombia.
In Colombia.
Tengo que agradecer la entrevista que me está haciendo Audrey como un indígena líder de América Latina y el Caribe.
He would first of all like to thank you for offering him the opportunity of this interview as a leader of Latin America and the Caribbean.
Pensando eso, es que Charles Gibbs nos ha concedido o nos ha dado ese espacio para poder hacer la IIC.
So he's grateful also to Charles Gibbs for having originally made a space for the IIG.
Why is it important that the United Religions Initiative bring messages from an indigenous perspective?
Tengo que agradecer y voy a responder desde mi perspectiva, desde mi objetivo, desde mi óptica, a la pregunta que ella me va a hacer, me está haciendo.
He will respond from his particular point of view as an indigenous person.
La cosmovisión conocido como indígena. La cuestión indígena aquí en la parte de América se conoce como cosmovisión andina, pero se ha ampliado más la cosmovisión indígena. La cosmovisión tiene varios nombres. Aquí es andina, indígena, de pueblos originarios o de pueblos autóctonos, pero es la misma cosa. Estoy, hermana, estoy aclarando de que la cosmovisión tiene varios nombres.
The cosmovision has many names.
Aquí en América se conoce como cosmovisión andina, por el Ande, por la cordillera.
So, there where he lives, it's in the Americas, it's known as the cosmovisión andía, or named after the Andes where he lives.
Ajá, de los Andes, de la cordillera de los Andes. Pero yo, como ya conozco fuera de América, me he contactado con otras organizaciones que llaman cosmovisión indígena.
Because he has had the opportunity to contact other indigenous peoples outside of his area, he has discovered that they refer to this as the cosmovision, the indigenous cosmovision.
Pero los hermanos del África no quieren llamarse indígena porque es un término derivado del colonialismo. En África no hubo colonialismo, entonces prefieren llamarse cosmovisión de pueblos originarios o de pueblos autóctonos.
So he's saying that in Africa they don't wish to be called indigenous because it's a colonial term that was applied to them, and they would prefer to be known as their way of thought as the cosmovision of the First Nations or the first people.
Pero es la misma cosmovisión con ciertas diferencias nada más.
So it's the same vision, it's the same cosmovision, it just has a few differences, a few certain little differences.
Nos consideramos parte de la naturaleza.
The first thing we consider is the place of nature within this cosmovision.
Vivimos dentro de ella y retornamos cuando morimos hacia ella. Por eso tenemos que cuidarla.
We come from the earth, from nature. And when we die, we return to the earth and to nature, and this is why we care for her.
Hay muchos hermanos indígenas que están ya también teniendo contacto con la llamada civilización y están perdiendo su cosmovisión y adquiriendo otras religiones.
Many of our indigenous brothers and sisters are leaving their villages and their culture and engaging in the outside culture of the world, and they're leaving their own cosmovision behind and joining other religions and finding other religions.
Porque los que catequizan o los que evangelizan nos tildan de personas como salvajes, que nuestra cosmovisión es muy anticuado. Por eso tenemos que abrazar alguna religión.
He's explaining that when the young people leave the culture of their village and move into the city, they feel that it's that cosmovision is very old and ancient and in some way backward. And so this is why they join the Catholics and the Evangelicals and the others who practice a religion of salvation rather than caring for the earth.
Incluso el Estado peruano en la educación formal la religión católica.
He's saying that this also includes the Peruvian government, who are now including in their public education the Catholic religion.
Y hace 20 años atrás han incorporado también el protestantismo.
And for the last 20 years also Protestant teachings.
No sé si está completo la respuesta.
What are the important values taught in the Quechua tradition that the world could benefit from? The wisdom that could be shared.
Yo había comunicado en la reunión anterior de que está basado en tres principios.
It's really based in three principles.
Y está en Quechua, ¿no? En la Mayuya, Amajeya, Amazúa. Tiroso, no ser ladrón y no ser ocioso. Ocioso, o sea, que no quiere hacer nada. Básicamente, no hay por qué hacer la guerra.
And so he's saying that it's based in three principles. The first one is not to lie, not to steal, is the second one. And the third one is do not be lazy. And he said originally there, as I understand, there was a fourth, and I asked him about it. It was do not kill. But he said that basically that translates into do not make war. And those are basically the principles upon which the Quechua live their lives.
What is important for you as a Quechua wisdom keeper to share on this very first show of the Global Indigenous Initiative called Indigenous Voices?
Como haya manifestado, estamos agradecidos a Uri por habernos aceptado como una forma de concebir al mundo como una religión junto a otras religiones de mayor alcance o de mayor envergadura, así como el judaísmo, el islamismo, el budismo. Son ya religiones sistematizadas, pero la cosmovisión nunca ha estado sistematizada. Pero gracias a Uri podemos hablar de la cosmovisión. Agradecemos a Uri que nos haya aceptado como una religión a la cosmovisión.
He's saying that the first thing that's important that is that as indigenous people, we need to be grateful and thank the URI for their willingness to accept the indigenous spiritual path and cosmovision.
Si no, hubiéramos desaparecido.
Without this, we would disappear.
Ahora estamos apareciendo, pero falta que podamos ordenarnos o sistematizar la cosmovisión como otras religiones.
So he's saying that one of the things that the indigenous people can do to make themselves more visible is to systematize the cosmovision that they have in order for other people to be able to understand it more easily.
Entonces, también nos va a servir que estamos contactándonos con otros indígenas del mundo para poder entre todos, de repente, ya dentro de la iniciativa indígena global, hacer el trabajo de sistematizar la cosmovisión.
So he says that one of the things that is so invaluable with the global indigenous initiative is that it is allowing indigenous people from all over the world to come together and share their cosmovision and discuss the ways in which they can systematize it in order for others to be able to understand it. And he feels that is part of the work of the IIG.
As the Global Indigenous Initiative and this global network of indigenous, one of the areas that I find often we have to really work on is the distinction between religion and spirituality and how we can bring them together.
¿Cómo le digo? Las religiones prácticamente no han sido entendidas desde el punto de vista espiritual.
He feels that practically, in reality, that religions as such are losing their spirituality because they're not practicing the spirituality. They're practicing a religion. They're losing their spirituality in the practice of going to church.
So it would be equivalent of saying becoming so much into the dogma part of it that the pure spirit of it is lost?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. That dogma has become more important than spiritual practice.
Okay. See. So with URI, we engage in an interfaith effort to bring the world together, to build cultures of peace. How does Alejandrino see the connection between that and the indigenous? In the interfaith movement, we don't often find the indigenous spirituality embraced fully. So we are very fortunate that URI has opened this opportunity for the combination of indigenous and faith-based traditions. Can we bridge that is the bottom line?
Solamente a recuperar y difundir con bastante autenticidad nuestras prácticas de la cosmovisión.
The thing that we can do to help to
recuperate
the spiritual aspects of religious celebration is what he is saying.
Okay.
So the way we can help is to show others how to re-engage in the spiritual side of religion.
Inclusive el calendario de festividades.
Including the calendar of festivities de naturalidad, no? Of the seasons and the natural.
Hay un ejemplo, hermana. Pasado mañana 2 de febrero, aquí se festejaba el Mucho Iguaraca, está en quechua, Mucho Iguaraca.
Pero
el catolicismo cuando invadió le ha incorporado Virgen Candelaria.
Ajá.
Ahora se festeja el Mucho Iguaraca como Virgen de Candelaria. Entonces, habría que también Mucho Iguaraca.
Oh, okay. So he's saying that on the 2nd of February, there is a large celebration. This celebration was originally a celebration of the first harvest, the gathering when the fruits were first ripe and when you first began to harvest.
Mm-hmm.
And now they also saw it of the Virgin of the Candelaria or the Virgin of the Candles. So they have managed to combine here religious practices and original indigenous practices in a way that everyone can appreciate and celebrate together. We would say in bulk.
Pediríamos a la parte de la espiritualidad a que también compartan en la práctica nuestros conocimientos que estamos aportando a Uri. Que la espiritualidad es como que es ajeno al humano, ¿no? Es otro.
Uh-huh.
Solamente lo practican especialistas, lo dominan esto. En la cosmovisión es el pueblo quien maneja todo esto.
So,
no es una persona especial.
So, part of what he's saying is that also the differences are that there's no particular person leading the celebration, directing this celebration, telling people how this celebration should go. It's a celebration involving the community, evolving from the community, and welling up into each member of the community, each as they practice it and experience it.
Y es espontáneo, es de cada uno, tiene que ir por voluntad propia, porque sabe, conoce el valor que tiene esa práctica.
So the values are contained in the practice, and each person who volunteers for this, it does it spontaneously and through the knowledge that it's through the practice of this that they learn and develop the values that are important.
Tiene que ser ese mismo día, no puede ser antes ni después, como en las otras religiones Y cuando hay tormenta, algo postergan, pero no en esto, no se postergan.
This is not something you can postpone. It just is that time and place. It doesn't matter what happens. It's on that day. It's not postponed till another day for convenience.
Es igual, ¿no? Cuando hay un parto, no puede decir el médico, no, ¿sabes qué? Mejor estamos de noche mañana. No, 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 no. Tiene que ser... Claro, así es natural.
Yeah. You have to see a doctor. Claro. You don't put it off till today or tomorrow. You know, till tomorrow or the next day. You go see the doctor. It's natural. It's something that happens in nature, and it's not to be postponed. You can't postpone spring. You can't postpone winter. Although we're trying here in California.
And we would call that in our traditions the following the natural cycles or natural laws.
Following
nature.
The natural path, yes.
Así es, claro.
Yeah, exactly.
El cosmos no perdona.
Yes, so the cosmovision is not lost.
Okay.
Si alguien por naturalidad tiene que fallecer mañana. No hay de que no, que sea pasado mañana o otro día, no.
No, it has to flow with nature. It can't be.
El equilibrio que hay en la naturaleza.
The equilibrium is found in nature.
When we talk about indigenous, we are talking about preservation of sacred sites and human rights and the sacredness of being able to do spiritual rituals and ceremonies. And I want to add the and, we're also talking about the environment, and we're talking about that balance, that natural connection to the cycles that Alejandrino spoke of. It really comes down to relationship, I think. Is that not so? Relationship with the earth, relationship with the cycles of time?
No agredir a la naturaleza, prácticamente, porque uno es parte de ella. No se puede agredir. Agredir a la naturaleza.
He's saying that you can't be at war with nature. You can't put yourself outside of it. You can't walk outside of it and still be in balance.
Yo le dije que la cosmovisión no es una concepción filosófica ni metafísica, ¿no?
He says that, as he has said, it's not, the cosmovision is not philosophical or metaphysical.
Ajá. Porque eso las religiones lo hicieron por intereses de grupo ya. Porque las religiones lo hicieron por interés de un grupo de personas ya. Lo pusieron desde un punto de vista filosófico.
Oh, so he says, you know, that religions, they try to bring up things that interest the group, but this not, you know, this cosmovision isn't about that. It's about...
Claro.
Yeah.
Por eso también las religiones se han dividido, se han politizado en varios, ¿no? De acuerdo al interés del grupo de personas. La naturaleza.
Y su relación con naturaleza.
Con el grupo de personas que habitamos en una determinada zona.
So he's saying that in his cosmovision, it's really your individual relationship with nature. So it comes back down to relationships, yeah.
And you find that balance in the practice of the spirituality. Who is indigenous?
¿Quién es indígena?
Los que vivimos en el campo, los que vivimos de la naturaleza.
He says, those who live in harmony with nature.
A través de la emisora que está manejando Audrey, a los otros pueblos que pueden denominarse pueblos originarios, pueblos autóctonos, o indígenas, o andinos, pero que son los pueblos originarios de la madre tierra, a que tenemos que unificar esfuerzos, tenemos que juntarnos también.
So he'd like to thank you once again for leading this IIG, and that no matter what we call ourselves, whether it's indigenous or First Nations peoples or original people, we all come from the Mother Earth, and we are all now have the opportunity to unite and share our cosmovision and our way of living.
I'd like to thank our elder Alejandrino Quispa for bringing such a powerful understanding of the Quechua in relationship to the Cosmovision and putting it in such a way that we could all connect with it. I particularly was grateful for the connection that he made to the importance of the harmony that we must have with nature, that when we're out of balance with nature, we can't be in balance within ourselves. I thought that was a very important point. And also the bridge work between the indigenous and the more, on a spirituality standpoint, the indigenous and the faith-based traditions, and how aligning some of the ceremonies with religious holidays, how that gives us an opportunity to build a bridge and to have a collective experience. I want to now introduce our next guest, who is Dr. Apila Colorado. And I'd like to ask if Dr. Apila is on the line. Let's see if she's joined us yet. Okay, looks like Apila is not here yet, but we know that she will be shortly. So we're going to have our second guest, Dr. Apila Colorado, joining us. She is Oneida Ngal, and she is from Maui, Hawaii. And we have a tremendous relationship, but I just want to finish saying that she is the founder and director of the Worldwide Indigenous Science Network, and we call that WISN. And WISN integrates science, culture, education, and enterprise development for program fund development and to network. One of the projects that's so important is to her right now is the Global White Lion Project. And this is something that's being networked globally, and indigenous elders who have been guardians of the sacred species are now coming forward and sharing their relationship with the teachings of the white lion that are found in different traditions around the world. Apila in the Worldwide Indigenous Science Network has offered many an opportunity to connect with their own indigenous spirit, their own indigenous understanding of their actual lineage. I was a graduate, a master's graduate of the program that was a part of Creation Spirituality in Naropa University. And a major part of the work that we did was each of us was given the task of following our roots, actually researching our genealogy, to journey back in time to connect with our ancestors, and then to come forward to see what message from the ancestors come forward, what we received from the ancestors, what we received from learning more about our indigenous knowledge. And it was through that process that I, in fact, began a journey of my own, as did many students in the program, to reconnect with our indigenous spirit.
Hello.
Dr. Apila Colorado, how are you?
Good morning, Audrey Scott Williams. I'm doing well. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you great, and your timing couldn't have been better. I was just finishing an introduction of you, knowing that by the time I finished, you would be online. So I'm so grateful to have you on the program today.
Thank you, Audrey.
I thought we could start by maybe, Apila, just talk about a little bit about the Worldwide Indigenous Science Network, why you brought that forward, what spirit was calling that forward in you, and kind of where you are today in relationship to that.
Okay, I'm lighting some cedar before I talk. I'm lighting some cedar, and the flame is erupting. Climbing up the cedar wand, and as the smoke is released, cleansing myself, acknowledging the great directions of life, Mother Earth, the Great Spirit, and the waters of life, which assembles and dissembles all, brings us together, sends us on our way, and creates the next generation of wisdom for the continuity of this sacred Mother Earth. We give thanks for the reality of our ancestors today and for the chance through this technology in the vision of Audrey Scott Williams to hold this place that we might come together and share our voices and our love. We give thanks for these things, ancestors. Bless the words and the silences and the time that we share right now. So, good morning, everyone. And Audrey, the Worldwide Indigenous Science Network that you're talking about, it has a part to it called the Indigenous Mind Program. And the Indigenous Mind Program is the heart of the Worldwide Indigenous Science Network's work. So I'd like to begin there. I came to the work young because I'm a person of mixed heritage. I'm half French and I'm half American Indian. My tribe is Oneata-Aga, Oneida. And when I was growing up, there was a lot of cultural loss. And I would say I didn't know what it meant to be Oneida, and I think most of my generation didn't know. Our ceremonies were gone, and we'd been relocated 1,000 miles from our original homeland to the state of Wisconsin. So when I was a young woman, it was a time when Africa was beginning to shake off its colonial yoke, and brilliant young African people who were educated in French universities and so forth began writing about decolonization and liberation and a psychology of the free mind. And I read those things going through my academic training, and I was so inspired. And I was also an activist in the American Indian movement. But I always felt split inside because I come from both genealogies. At the same time, I was going through, in this bifurcated way, the freedom of religion, American Indian freedom of religion law was just about to be passed. And sort of in anticipation of that, and in part because of our fight for it, we began to be able to be in ancient, ancient American Indian cultural ceremonies. And because the ceremonial ways had been against the law in the U.S. for so long, the ceremonies were like locked in time. They were just as they were at the moment of contact. So going through those ceremonies inculcated and immersed me in a way of knowing and being that was embedded in my genes and woke me up to this very, very different way of knowing and being, a way that I longed for with all my heart. But because I was also half Western and also going through these advanced degree programs, my rational mind was watching all the time what I was going through as I was regaining my Indigenous identity. And at the end of my doctoral program, I came to the conclusion that it wasn't enough for me as an Oneida woman to have this advanced degree training, even from Ivy League, and have the thought that I would go home and change my people. That was how I was thinking about it, that I would help my people by going home and making changes within my culture. And I realized at the end of my degree that the best change I could do is to change my white self, to encounter the white self of me, and to regain my tribal identity in my French way if I could. And I knew that I had the tools to do it because elders had told me that, and I had visions and dreams. And that was the beginning of the Indigenous Mind Program. The Indigenous Mind Program is actually an academic program, but it's a ceremony housed in an academic site. And the way that came into being is, as you know, Audrey, ever since I've been a young woman, under the table and quietly, I've been traveling around the world, networking and supporting the practitioners of Indigenous healing ways and wisdom for 35 years. And for the first 25 of those 35 years, the elders said I couldn't talk about it to anybody because the knowledge needed to be protected that way. Now, because of the crisis with the earth and the environment, they say there's no more time for secrets. So if you go to my website, you see all kinds of videos where elders are talking, not like, please help us save our culture. Elders are saying, listen, everyone, we have a message for you. Let's get together, let's work together, and let's make these changes that need to happen. So in my journey to regain the Indigenous side of my French self, it led me, after about 10 or 15 years, to the south of France, where I am now in a community where they speak their Indigenous tribal language of Occitan, which also has been horribly oppressed, like Indigenous people everywhere, and which is going through a renaissance. So I found the Indigenous people of my ancestry on the French side, and I'm participating in that people's remembrance and renewal process. And my contribution is what we learned going through the American Indian movement, inspired by the liberation of the African colonies and the retribalization there, the American Indian movement, the civil rights movement, all those things informed what I was doing. But most importantly, the ceremonial, the ancient ceremonial voice that connected me with the ancestors and the earth is what put me strong on my feet on this Mother Earth and let me take step by step to where I am today, running a small NGO that spans the globe, connecting Indigenous healers, and running this academic program to help people remember their Indigenous mind. And the elders from around the world that I have networked with and continue to network with help me to do that. So that's the answer.
It's beautiful, and thank you for pausing to light the cedar and to share a prayer. And as you did that, I found myself sitting in the ceremonial room there in Maui and had a vision of you sitting on the mat lighting the cedar in the bowl. So I thank you for that. And if you would just pause with me just for one moment, I'd like to call in the spirit of Mr. McCaw and Auntie Poi Poi and those who were so much a part of those early years. So if you bear with me one second, let's do a chant. We are Ohana.
Ai, ai, teu kakoli uli wanakua hi manaku ala no kula i vilae i te viko ka mauna tana hele ke ko a mauna ulua hai tale o ka la nino mamua a ma hope mai ho i e kameta i a oi te toa i a oi ta holo i holo pono no e ka mana o e kaunei i ola na hawai i wha ta honua i wha mau i tali mo te aloha ano ei hei ke nā ko a hola e tai ke mai mo iehu mau no ia i ta mana o nā kupuna e kia i mai ne ano ei aloha kā ko e nā hawai e nā pua ka aina e kupua e ne aloha e aloha e aloha e.
I just wanted to take a moment to breathe that in remembrance of standing in the cradle of civilization. And maybe we might as we talk about in recent days their beautiful spirit that has brought us, I feel like, to a new sacred altar. And so thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Oh, yeah. in the spirit of that, Apila, two great elders that we've lost, it reminds me always of how important it is for us to honor the elders and to do anything that we can, and you and I both understand this, to bring their voices forward, to share the wisdom and the stories that they hold in a sacred way that have so much to do with us writing a new page in the history and evolution of humanity. Whew. So as we're in this space, there's one question that I'd like to ask, Apila. How did all of that lead you to the White Lion? And I think of Baba Credo Mutwa, and I think of he's been journeying right into the White Lion's effort and the energy that's going into that, not just for the lions themselves, but the ancient connection that they have to the stories that are found in traditional wisdom. Could you share that?
Yes. In 2002, Audrey Scott Williams and I, with other people, including the Hawaiian elders she just mentioned around the chant, we traveled to South Africa for the World Summit on Sustainable Development. And as a side experience, it gave us a chance to meet with Baba Credo Mutwa. And it was something, I wanted to meet him more than I wanted to go to the UN meeting. And we were fortunate because we were able to do that. But as we traveled around the South Africa, the UN had organized that people could go take like a little safari Land Rover trip out onto this preserve where they were doing an archaeological dig where they had uncovered the remains of the oldest human being ever. And so we went on this Land Rover, and Audrey and I and some others, the Land Rover stopped because the dig was up on a hill and the elders couldn't go there because the Land Rover couldn't make it all the way up there. So some of us walked to the top, and when we got to the top, we were met by this beautiful young African tribal woman who was in charge of the dig, and she was the first African and the first woman to ever be in charge of a scientific research project like this. And it was very cold. It was a winter day there, and the landscape was gray and brown and windswept. It's semi-arid terrain. And she said, my friends ask me, why do I do this? It's dirty, it's cold. And she said, but I tell them, I don't mind. I'm digging for my ancestors. And when I heard that, I saw my life in the eyes of this young woman, and I thought, that's what I'm doing too. I'm digging for my ancestors, and now I've come to the source, the cradle of humankind, the Rift Valley from which human life emanates. And this story is held in the voice, in the breath, and the passion of this young woman. We prayed, and then I found myself overcome with emotion, and I walked off to the side of the hill, and so did Audrey, as if we're going back down the hill to the Land Rover. And I looked out. I didn't want anyone to see me misty-eyed. I just needed a private moment. I looked out, and suddenly I was in a different place. It was tropical and surrounded by, I was standing surrounded by green tropical seas, and the feeling was amazing, just love, just pure love, and it was so compelling. It's just, I dropped to my knees, and tears were just not just coming from my eyes, but just like streaming out of my eyes, and I was overcome with ecstasy. And then as soon as I noticed that was the case, the vision was gone. And while the tears are in my eyes, I wanted to run down to the Land Rover to talk to Hale Makua, my Hawaiian mentor, esteemed elder, and share that with him and see if he could help me understand. As I was making my way quickly down the hill, I almost bumped into Audrey, and she was looking at a rock with a white sort of X on it, and I realized something mystical had happened to her, and she was also overcome with feelings. And she said something about origins and stars and people, you know, spirits that came from the stars. But I don't remember. I was too overcome with the spiritual message. And so I get down to the Land Rover, and Mr. McCool was sitting up in one of the bench seats above, sort of at my head level. Hawaiians never touch the head because it's revered as the most sacred place of the body where spirit touches us. But in this case, he leaned over from his seat and put his big brown right hand on the side of my head, and he said, "You remember." Then I cried more. But out of my love for him, I would never question, well, what did I remember? But about 10 minutes after that happened and I got back in the Land Rover, I'm thinking, what did I remember? And many years have gone by since then. And during that time, I found myself led to the caves of France, where people who came from Africa 40,000 years ago and other places painted these World Heritage sites with these beautiful, beautiful animals. And before I even went there, I had a chance to talk to Baba Mutwa, because after that experience, the very next day, after the experience at the Cradle of Humankind, we did meet Baba. And Baba and Auntie and Mr. Makua said, "You need to bring the healers together, Apila, and to meet with Baba Mutwa." I tried for many years. I brought healers together everywhere. And interestingly enough, where I brought them together and was able to was in the caves of France, where the paintings of these ancient animals are, and that also simultaneously give you a place to remember how the northern hemispheric mind was when we were in balance with nature. When people went into those caves and painted these animals, Picasso said he was not even an artist compared to what they had done. That's how exquisite this art is in the caves. And the acoustics in the caves are amazing. It was brilliant people that created them. You make a whisper, you like blow air between your lips at a place in the caves where there's a mastodon painted, and you'll hear the roar of the mastodon. So these are astonishing places to visit. So I was able to bring healers together there. And then in Central Asia, in a land, Himalayan extension country called Kyrgyzstan, with that Kyrgyz tribal people live and run. So the Kyrgyz people, the Kyrgyz elders, lit a fire called Uluat. The last time they had done the fire was 30 or 40,000 years ago, when the people who came into northern, sent out of Africa and into the far north, did a fire and then went separate ways. They did a Uluat fire. They went north and became Siberians, east and became Japanese. Some became American Indians. Some became Western European tribal people. These Kyrgyz people held that memory. They had that fire, and they relit it again. And my job was linking shamans together to synchronistically light fires all over the world, that humanity would wake up and remember that not only that we're related, but who we are, and who we are as indigenous people related to this earth, and then remember our unity in our diversity. So that fire happened about 7 years ago. And then I ended up in Ethiopia and had gathered healers there. And now, just recently, after all these years, I woke up and was telling Audrey a few days ago, I realized that since we met Baba, that I have retraced the migration of humanity from out of Africa to where we are today. And indigenous healers say, when we're out of balance, what we need to do is return to our place of origin. And from that place, come into balance in our story and come out and tell our story in a new way. Another way of putting it is to reenact is to remember. And meeting Bubba tells me, and I think you too, Audrey, we have come full cycle in this gigantic 26,000-year cycle. And now it is time we're waking up and remembering the messages and the love that our species was started with in that motherland by the embodiment that we are of Mother Earth, as well as the integration of the spirit and the wisdom from the star beings. It came into being there, and that's what we're asked to remember. And in a few months, that's what Audrey and myself are going to do.
Apila, where do the white lions come into the story?
Oh, thank you, Audrey. So Baba Mutwa told us about the white lions of South Africa. Subsequently, he told us the story, and he said that the Creator has sent messengers to help humanity. And the white lions of Chimbavati actually means where the star lions come down. If you see the white lions, you'd be amazed. They're snowy white in a dusty brown environment, and they have bright blue eyes, and the pupils are round like a human being's, not cat eye pupils, you know, up and down. So I had the chance, let me back up a bit. So Baba worked with a young woman named Linda Tucker, of South African origins, and he told her that her job was to bring the white lions back to their original homeland, because Europeans, as they colonized South Africa, hunted them to extinction. They wanted to hang their heads as trophies on the walls, and they said they're just albinos, kill them anyway. But because of their unique coloring, zoos and so forth had collected some of them, including in South Africa. And Linda Tucker's job was to go to raise money, buy lands, legally fight, and with raised funds, purchase the freedom of these white lions to restore them to Chimbavati. And she is doing that. She has 8 white lions there now at the Global White Lion Protection Fund. And I've had a chance to work with her and visit with her. And the first time that I saw these white lions, of course, you're in a truck, and they don't touch them, or they don't try to be pets with them. Their job is to rewild these animals and have new animals birthed on their homeland, because these star lions, they are our messengers from the stars, from the Creator, about how to survive the times that we are in. So these animals are also the most central sacred animal to Zulu people. And having them restored to their homelands, there's only 8 she has so far, because it's massively difficult to do what she's doing and very, very dangerous. There are old apartheid camps, safari camps all around her, hostile to her, and it's enormously expensive to do what she's doing. So the first time I saw these lions, there was a mother, Mara, and her 3-year-old cubs. And I was in a truck, a covered truck in the back. And when one of the young lionesses turned her head and looked at me, it was as if an inaudible, gigantic vibration or a purr that you couldn't hear of energy waves just went through my body and my skull. Again, dropped to my knees, tears pouring out of my eyes. And if I were to say it now, I would say, like, every time I've come in contact with what Indigenous people would say are the star beings, it's that overwhelming sensation. And it's not only, I guess it's a total embodied sensation of just love, light, wisdom, and the feeling that all is right in the world and I'm right with it. And an understanding of something nameless of all our relations.
Well, that reminds me earlier, Apila, we had Elder Alejandrino Kutzbe on, and he spoke about how the cosmovision, that our spirituality comes and evolves in our practice, and it's a very personal thing. And as I was listening to you, I was thinking about that personal connection with the earth and the awareness of our relationship to nature and even the universe. But how when we really engage in that opportunity, we also find others who are doing the same thing. And it doesn't have to be the same way. It doesn't have to be the same ceremony. But there's like this collective ceremony of awareness that's happening that seems to be awakening now and bringing us to a place. I think we're more than ever before, we are beginning to get how important it is that we understand our mutual responsibility for the earth and the mutuality of every piece of action that we each do, how that affects how it affects the weeds, if you will, or the web of life.
Even,
so I thank
yes,
you.
Audrey, even like what we're doing right now, there are people who are listening, and as they're doing that, holding sacred space, and it's holding sacred space that, in my experience right now, you all are making me strong, because as I'm talking and the spirit's coming through me, I'm realizing it's becoming real, more real to me. And how many places could I go to have this conversation? Not many. Maybe none. Maybe this is the only one. And in any event, this conversation with you, Audrey, and with people listening in and putting their love and their attention into this, it's quickening something. It's quickening something I am a part of by saying the words I'm saying, but it's quickening something through your energetic structuring and guiding, and by the attention and intention of the people holding the circle with us, and by what's coming from up from the earth and down from the heavens as this happens. So I thank you.
Apila, thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate you taking time. I know how busy you are right now. And for all the reasons that you just said, thank you for joining the sacred moment and teaching us in so many ways at such deep levels of the journey, a journey that we're all on some level. That we're all there, and we're going to end up where we need to be, because that's our destiny. So I thank you, and aloha.
Aloha. Thank you.
Ai ai täyka kon muli wana kuahi manaku alono kula ivila e ida viko kamauna tana hele ke ko mauna ulua paidale okala ni no mamu ama hope mai ho ie kaneta ia oi te to ia oi ta holo i holo pono no e kamana o e kaune i ola na hawai I whaata honu, I whaamau I tali mo te aloha. Ano ei hei ke nā koa hola e, tai ke mai mo iehu mauno ia. I ta mana o nā kūpuna e kia I mai nei, ano ei aloha kā koa e nā hawai. E nā pua o ka aina e kukua e nei, aloha e, aloha e, aloha e.
All nations, all faith, one prayer.
Thank you so much for being a part of our premier show, Indigenous Voices. Our guest on February 20th, which will be our next show, I want to invite you to join us again. Our guest will be Chief Arville Looking Horse. He is the 19th generation keeper of the White Buffalo Calf Pipe Bundle and holds the responsibility of spiritual leader among the Lakota, Dakota, and Nakota people. And Takiya Blaney, 12-year-old Takiya Blaney, is Tsleil-Waututh First Nation from BC, Canada. Along with singing, songwriting, and acting, she is concerned about the environment, especially the preservation of marine and coastal life. And not only is she concerned about it, she is quite an activist in her own right, as you will see. So thank you for joining Indigenous Voices today, and may you put a little mark on your calendar for February 20th, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, and so you'll have to adjust for your time zone. We look forward to having you back to our sacred circle. Aloha.